Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of the KRFY Morning Show. This is Julie Calamine, one of the now three morning show hosts that show up on Tuesdays, and I'm so happy to be here this morning for a bunch of reasons. One is that we're going to be talking with Katie from Kinnexu Land Trust in just a few minutes. Hello, Katie.
Hi, Julie.
All right, we'll get back to you in a moment, but first I think we ought to talk about the weather because it is just a phenomenal October, fall, wonderful late summer, beautiful week. And so without going into every little detail, it looks like we're going to be having highs in the middle 60s to low 70s and lows in the 30s, high 30s and middle 40s. And lots of sun, a few clouds. I don't see any rain in the forecast even until next Monday. So enjoy your late summer, early fall weather while we have it, everybody, because we know it's coming. Gloomy time. Right.
Yes. Did you see the Northern Lights last night?
I tried, Katie. I'm in town now. I'm in the summertime. I was out in Kokalala, and I think it would have been a better chance. But I had a friend from Laclede send me a photo, and it was just amazing. Thank you, Bonnie.
Yeah, spectacular.
Oh, great. Well, forecast is over, and it's great. And now let's move on to our a really interesting topic for this morning, and it is what is happening with Kinnexu Land Trust. And I'll introduce you fully, Katie. Katie, you are Katie Eglin Cox. You're the executive director of Kinnexu Land Trust. And for maybe the one person in town who doesn't know who and what you do, give us a quick overview of what you're all about.
Absolutely. Kinnexu Land Trust is your local community land conservation organization. The foundation of our work, we started in 2002. So many years ago, we started with the foundational work, which is in land conservation. And so it's protecting land in perpetuity for our communities and for the health of our environment. So we did that work really focused for about 12 years before we got into more what we call, in addition, community conservation. So that's what you probably see the most of what on a daily basis when you run into Kinnexu Land Trust. It's probably when you're walking up at Pine Street Woods, which is protected 180 acres that we have in conservation, but is full of trails for our community, where we partner with many organizations to provide programs like Nordic skiing in the winter, mountain biking in the summer, and fat tire biking in the summer as well, and just a really great place to go out and just take a hike. So that's our the more local land that you'll see. There's some out near Clark Fork, but then we also work in our schools. We're working right now in a on community housing. So we go broadly across our community, just really looking at where can we have an impact and where can we connect people more closely to the land around them and help take care of this land that we all love so much.
It's a great mission. And, I started doing this radio program something like 8 or 9 years ago. And I remember back in that day, I was a new and kind of nervous broadcaster, but we had the chance to talk to Eric Grace, who was with the Land Trust for some years and part of that beginning way of looking at things. And it was a different way. There was a lot of conservation, but there wasn't that much access to the lands that you were conserving. So it's mm-hmm. a really big change in your mission or goals, isn't it?
It is. It was really, when you think about private land conservation, because most often we're working with private landowners who make this choice to voluntarily put their land in conservation. And so when you're doing a lot of that work, a lot of people in the community don't see that work because it really is between the between Kinnexu Land Trust and that private landowner. And so what we really started thinking about is how can we better connect people in our community to the land around them if the work that we're doing is so private in nature. And so that's when we thought about, one way we could do that is really take a piece of land that is probably going to be near and dear to the hearts of our community members, save it, and then allow them access to it in order to, for all the things that Pine Street Woods is good for, our, the betterment of our health, our both our physical health and our mental health, to have a place where our community can gather. And so, yes, so it was a way of sort of unfolding and making more apparent the impact of conservation on people that conservation could have on people's everyday life.
Yeah, it's really a big change, and it's been so appreciated in this community. On my note sheet, I've got a little note about how is Kiniksu Land Trust different from other land trusts, and I think you've mostly explained it, but the example I always think of is a huge organization that most people would know about, the Nature Conservancy, and they have some programming that would be similar to what you do, but I think not as much. I think your emphasis is really quite a bit different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say, you know, we tend to do way more community conservation because we're in the communities that we serve. The Nature Conservancy, which is a great partner of ours, really works on such a much larger scale. So a lot of projects that they will do tend to be higher in acreage. So they'll do, even though we did just close on like the largest conservation easement we've ever done with Idaho Forest Group, but they tend to do those 1,000 and 10,000 acre conservation easements.
Yes.
Where we work way more, we work more locally within our communities that we serve.
Very much so. And another thing that I do know about them is that if they don't see the land donation as something that might work within their larger scheme, they'll accept it, but then they might sell the land and use that money to buy land that's part of a larger kind of
right.
overall master plan. But mm-hmm. how do you guys deal with that if someone wants to conserve a piece of property that might not fit into your what you're looking at for
right.
your greater plan?
It depends on, you know, there, land has to have, for us, there is strategy and strategic vision behind what lands we will accept. Ideally, they're over 20 acres. Now, we've taken land that's under 20 acres, but it really must fit into our certain, we say the five things, three W's, two C's, working lands. So lands, agricultural lands and forestry lands, that is land that is particularly important to us, especially because of where we live. And when we think about making sure that we can feed the people that live in our communities long into the future, working lands are super important. Lands that help to protect water. So a lot of lands along waterways or wetlands, that's a land of importance to us. While we think about wildlife, the third W is wildlife. So land that the wildlife use, connectivity, so crossing, you know, we really think a lot about the land between the Selkirks and the Cabinets and making safe passage for animals. Then the two C's are land with climate resiliency. So lands that have been shown that we have a changing climate, that they will stay resilient and long into the future. And then the fifth one, and one that's really near and dear to our heart, is lands of cultural significance. So working really closely with the Kalispell tribe and the Kootenai tribe of Idaho to figure out what lands are really important culturally for them, and then helping to find land that fits that helping to preserve it.
Well, that's a great model for understanding the lands that you want to work with. I mm-hmm. just think it sounds perfect. Yeah, that's great. And I think we'll talk about this more at the end of the program, because we want to get into what's happening, what's going on with education, and all the interesting events you have to talk about. But I recently received a great email from you all about planning my legacy or my estate planning, and we'll save it for the end because I think it'll be something great for people to think on and maybe consider, maybe get in touch with you. But the point of the email was really think about whether you might have some land or if you might want to devote part of your estate to this great organization. And it moved me. It was just a great email to think about how we might save either our land or contribute to making sure that we save the beautiful places in the area. So that'll come at the end. But folks, think about it. If you're working on your estate planning, it mm-hmm. might be, Kiniksu might be one for you to think about.
I'm glad it had an impact on you, Julie.
Yeah, thank you. Anyway, let's move on to topics that you would like to address. And we've got quite a few upcoming events. You want to start with Spooky Stories Halloween Festival?
Yes, our Spooky Stories Halloween Festival is always so this is the second annual, so I shouldn't say always so fun, but it was so much fun last year. And to be honest, we were not prepared last year for the amount of people that came to Spooky Stories. It was awesome and overwhelming. And so we are ready now this year. We have, it'll start at 4:00 on October 26th. We have many events going on. So last year we just did the Spooky Story Walk. And so a lot of people waited in line in order to go through the walk, which is really, there's a great story that goes along with the walk, and there will be a new story this year. So along with the story, though, we're going to have many different activities going on while people wait for the spooky walk. So that will be at the Sled Hill this year, so on October 26th. That is a fundraiser for Kinnexu Folk School. So our folk school initiative, that those funds will go to the folk school. So there will be a small fee this year in order to attend that event.
Yeah, but it'll be worth it.
It'll be totally worth it.
That's right. Okay, so Spooky Stories Halloween Festival. We won't say too much more about that so that people will be excited and come and be surprised and maybe scared a little bit. But also, we've got on the very same day, October 26th, Fall Forest Festival in Thompson Falls.
Yes, so in Thompson Falls, on the same day, they've combined two of their festivals into one large community celebration and full of informational booths. And so we invite everybody. Kayla Mosher is our outdoor coordinator in Thompson Falls. So she will be working the Fall Forest Festival in Thompson Falls. So if you either live in Thompson Falls or you're interested in a nice fall drive into Thompson Falls and probably go for a small hike, because they have great hikes right in and around town, and enjoy the fall festival.
That sounds fun. And one more October 26th item, SNC Winter Welcome.
Yes, so the Sandpoint Nordic Club is going to be doing their Winter Welcome, and that will happen before the Spooky Stories. So you can float from Winter Welcome right into Spooky Stories, and it will give you a chance to say hello to the whole Nordic crew, to purchase your memberships so that you are ready for when the snow flies and you can go up and ski at Pine Street Woods. And generally, always just a really festive affair. So that happens. I believe that starts at noon on October 26th.
All right. So October 26th is a date to put on everybody's calendar. And a note to myself, I've got to get in touch with the Nordic Club, because they would be great people to talk to right about now.
Yes, they would. And they have a fun and spicy new trail at the Sled Hill that they would love to talk to you about.
Oh, cool. There are some spicy trails out there already. So if it's going to get spicier, I better sharpen up my skis for turning, I think.
Exactly.
One nice thing that I've enjoyed about skiing at Pine Street Woods is that when there's no snow, for example, at Farragut, or if there's no snow down at the Blue Gate, there can be snow at Pine Street.
Yes. And that was one of the keys in identifying Pine Street Woods, is that it was 500 feet in elevation above town.
Yes. It makes it, that little bit makes a big difference, mm-hmm. doesn't it?
It really does.
We appreciate it. All right. Into November, we have November 7th, Get Plowed. Uh-oh.
Yes. Our Get Plowed for Pine Street Woods event is always, and I think this is almost the fifth year we've done it. And this is a really important event, because as we know, that road to Pine Street Woods is essential to keep in good working order in order to enjoy the trails. And it is north facing, so it can get icy and it can get snowy depending on the season. And we hear that this year it might get even snowier because of if our predictions are correct, which I hope they are. And so it's really essential that we plow that road, maintain it, and rock it and sand it when we need to. And that costs the organizations about $5,000. And when I say organizations, it's a shared cost between Pondere Peddlers, Sandpoint Nordic Club, and Kinnexu Land Trust, the three, obviously the three main users. And that was an initial agreement that we had at all as organizations that we would put that bill together. And so we throw a fun party this year. It's at McDuff's Beer Hall on November 7th in the evening, in order to raise money for plowing costs. So there's going to be, there's always some fun things to get auctioned off. And this year, I think we're doing some really personal things, like I do Nordic instruction, so I'm going to put together a really fun day, Nordic day, and other people are doing the same, putting together some of their skills as little packages that you can bid on. So it'll be a fun night with hopefully some good music, a fire outside, and some beer and root beer flowing inside.
That does sound fun, and it's right in town, easy to get to. And right around November 7th is a good time to be coming inside and starting to see your friends. It could be kind of a slow time. It's in between, a little bit in between when we're out hiking all the time and when we start skiing, etc. So
exactly.
A good time for a party. Mm-hmm. Very nice. All right. Put that on your schedules, folks. And then we also have, in that same time period, November 9th till November 11th, Folk Art Exhibit at the Ag Center. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so this is an event in partnership with all of our arts organizations, including Pondere, the Pondere Arts Council. And it is a display of many different artists and their the crafts and art that they make using skills from yesteryears, I would say. So bringing some of that folk art and to us in an exhibit. This is through the Idaho Arts Council is spearheading this, and it's at the Sandpoint Organic Agricultural Center, which is down Boyer, across from right after the turnoff to Schweitzer Mountain Road. And that art will be on display at the Agricultural Center November 9th through the 11th. And our folk school is part of the contributing partners on that exhibit.
Okay. Is that free? Is there a charge? Is it a fundraiser?
I'm pretty certain that that is free. I hope that I'm not giving you poor information, but I'm pretty certain it's free.
All right. And what a great place to exhibit art anyway.
It
and
is. It the building itself is art.
Yes,
so.
It is. And of course, they've had a rough year with the flooding and having to do a lot of repairs. So it'll be nice to see how that turned out.
Exactly.
If you all haven't been in there lately, I haven't. So I would have to put that on my calendar too.
All right. So a lot going on to keep us busy in the fall.
All right, that's great. And Katie, I think what we'll do now is take a short music break, and then I'd like for us to come back and talk about classes and your work with the schools, very important work that you're doing.
Excellent.
All right, so short music. Well, that was a fun song. Elmore James, Sunny Land. For those of you just joining us, this is KRFY Community Radio for the Idaho Panhandle. Volunteer supported for the most part, and I'm one of the volunteers. This is Julie Calamine with the Tuesday Morning Show. And this morning, how wonderful, we're joined by Katie Eglin Cox of Kinnexu Land Trust. Katie's the executive director, and she knows just about everything, but there are two things it turns out she didn't know, so she's going to make a correction.
Oh, they shouldn't really send me in with all of these dates and numbers. So I want to correct on your calendars, if you wrote this down, if you want to be a part of the SNC Winter Welcome, that doesn't start at noon. It starts from 1 to 4 at Pine Street Woods on October 26th. And then we'll be followed by Spooky Stories, not at 4 o'clock, from 6 to 9.
Okay.
So 6 to 9 on October 26th. Thank you for letting me correct this.
Of course. It's a minor correction, but important. You'd hate to be getting early to everything on a fun day like that. All right. So we've got that correction made. And now we're moving on to some really interesting information and topics. And the first one is going to be talking about the Teamtober Thursday work parties. Tell us about them.
Yes. Yeah, so this, we call it Teamtober because POP and Sandpoint Nordic Club and Kinnexu Land Trust we are all asking for volunteers on Thursday afternoon. Let's enjoy these spectacular fall days by working on trails at the Sled Hill. So a portion of we're still plowing Pine Street Woods Road, but we're hoping to have a trail for people to be able to park at the Sled Hill this winter and be able to climb up to Pine Street Woods on skis if you are
so
wanting
inclined.
An extra fitness workout.
I know
so,
people like that.
Exactly.
I may not be one of them, but I know many of them.
We
so I'm
know
sure
them all.
Excited.
Exactly.
Yes.
So we have a wide trail to work on, and it is pretty special. It is some amazing. I have to say, I worked on it last Thursday. It has some amazing views from it of the Baldy Range. And so we're looking for volunteers every Thursday in October from 4 o'clock to 6 o'clock. Join us at the Sled Hill at any time. If you don't get off of work until 5, come after you get off of work. And then we also are working on a narrow trail on the east portion of the Sled Hill property in order to give people easy access if they're coming up from walking up from Pine Street. They can just easily at the corner access the trail and head right on up also to Pine Street Woods. So we have a narrow trail and a wide trail to work on in October to get ready for the snow to fly.
Nice. That sounds like some kind of easy and accessible trail work. And I'll just send a shout out to the volunteers from Idaho Trails Association. Our trail season is over for the most part, having our volunteer party this coming weekend. And if volunteers, if you Idaho Trails Association volunteers, or if you're trail work wannabes, this is a great way to understand what this work is like. It can be easy or hard. It's as much effort as you're able to put out. And you'll meet people that have similar interests. And usually they're just about as much fun as anything you can do. So
absolutely. And they feel very fulfilling when you end up using those trails.
Yes.
So, and yes, you're right, Julie. It can be as easy as my job last week was taking loppers and cutting small roots. So, and we had all ages, all the way down to, I think, 3 years old helping us. So there's work for everyone.
That's right. So don't be afraid to come and help out on trails. It's really satisfying, and you can work your rear end off, or you can just kind of enjoy meeting people. Mm-hmm. Either way, it's good.
Exactly.
All right. So that's a big deal. And there's one coming up in 2 days, folks. So that's this Thursday. Think about it. Now let's move on to other really interesting topics that you can share with us. IFW grant. What's that?
Yeah. So this was Idaho Fish and Wildlife. We got a grant. So as you know, Julie, we do a lot of work with our local schools. And so we went after a grant in order to put game cameras in the playgrounds of all of our schools so that the kids could see what animals inhabit their school playgrounds in the evening. So this grant not only puts in the cameras, but it gives all of the infrastructure for the schools to choose, you know, how they want to be able to view those pictures. If they need to purchase an iPad, they can do that. But we're looking forward to having kids be able to track and count the animals and what types of animals visit their school at night, what they see.
That's fun.
It's a super fun
thing for kids. They're out playing, and now they'll know what's playing on their playground at night. I love it.
Exactly. And it's another way we have. Just to expand on our education program, which started over 8 years ago, just doing a class or two within some of the elementary schools, has now blossomed to a program where not only do we deliver education, but we have 6 outdoor educators in the schools in our district, which is huge. This has really, in the last 3 years, exploded from Washington Elementary started with, and then Farman with 1 outdoor educator. And now we have 6 schools that have outdoor educators that we then try to support through our programs and through our director and assistant director of education go into those schools to support those educators. And so this gives those educators just one more sort of tool in their tool bag to excite the children about what goes on outdoors.
Yeah, such an important thing to be thinking about for kids. It comes up in the reader with kids and, you know, of course, all the media. Selkirk Outdoor Leadership Experience, they're focused on that, and now Kiniksu. So let's hope our kids become kids that love the outdoors. That's
yes.
What we're all hoping for.
And that's what it's all about, connecting our kids to the place that they love and so that they learn how to comfortably be outside, experience the outdoors for, again, you know, just as we talked about with the trails, for their mental health, for their physical health, and for their lifelong experiences that they can have in the outdoors.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Okay, another program, Kootenai Elementary School Rewild Project, that's now open.
Yeah, so we have this program that we worked on starting 3 years ago, where we came into 3 different schools and worked with the students and the administration and the faculty in order to do what we call rewilding the playground. So we have all of these outdoor educators now. We have outdoor classes, but sometimes what we found was when you have an outdoor educator, it only works if you have an amazing space outside to take the children. And so, for instance, when at Washington Elementary, right, we have a pretty flat monoculture Kentucky bluegrass playground. And so Hallie often has to, you know, the ideal is to be able to take them to the Arboretum, but when a class is only 45 minutes long, there's not a lot of time, especially with those first graders with short and little legs to get them all the way to the arboretum and all the way back. So we started thinking about, well, as we are getting more and more outdoor educators, we need a classroom for them right outside the classroom door. And so we got grants in order to redesign playgrounds in order to change them to more of a natural setting. And so our first project was sort of the easiest hanging fruit because Kootenai Elementary has this lovely 10 acres behind their school. And so we had worked on a very small trail there, but a lot of the teachers didn't use it in the wetter times of the year because it has a lot of wetlands on it. And the trail was narrow, so the kids would come back with wet feet. And so in order to take away those barriers to use, we have worked on getting rid of hazard trees. We've built a 5-foot widened trail that can be accessible. We have put in boardwalks over waterways, and so feet stay dry. And then now we're built, along with the classrooms at Kootenai Elementary, we're working on building 6 outdoor classrooms out of rocks and logs and stumps and creating boulder hops and a bird blind. And so that part is still in creation. You'll go, you can experience the trail and walk the loop. Anybody can. It's in a lovely neighborhood. And as the fall goes on, we're going to be building more and more of those outdoor classrooms.
Cool. That sounds fun. And another opportunity for volunteers, I would guess.
Absolutely.
Yes. Very good. Absolutely. Well, that's a great program to be working on. All right. So you've mentioned it already, but the county does now have 6 outdoor educators. We don't maybe need to touch on that again, but wow, what an amazing growth from where you started.
Yes. And we also have an amazing teacher at the high school now who is working on bringing her kids up to the Pine Street Woods for, we have a forestry course up there in order for them to learn things like how do you tell the height of a tree, what types of tree, you know, the different species of a tree, teaches them about cruising logs, how many board feet are in a log. So there's a forestry course. If you go up to Pine Street Woods and walk that main trail, you'll see anybody can participate in it. There's a pacing out to a pacing course. So you can participate in all of the activities that are typically a part of the forestry contest in the spring. So Heather Morgan has her forestry class going up to Pine Street Woods for the high school, really getting them down into the woods to work.
Yes, and a career path for some kids.
Absolutely.
Really could be, and maybe an encouragement to get to college and learn more about forestry. So what
exactly.
A great program.
Exactly.
Neat. All right, and this is pretty big, the next topic. It's, I think, your largest acquisition in your history, Pritchard Creek. Tell us about it.
Yeah, it's our largest easement in history. It's nearly 2,000 acres, so this is a project that is really, really quite special for our region, and it's really quite special in terms of Reagan, our conservation director, said she really believes this is probably one of the very only donated easements by a large timber company, because there are many easements that happen with industrial timber companies through typically the Forest Legacy Program. But in this case, Idaho Forest Group donated almost $3 million towards this conservation easement. So this is, it's in Shoshone County. It's just right over the border from our work in Thompson Falls. If you were in Thompson Falls and you went up over Thompson Pass, you would be down near Murray, Idaho, which is where this conservation easement is. It was stitching together over 75 parcels of land that pull all of the land together that is along the Pritchard Creek. And Pritchard Creek is a creek that was really devastated by mining activity. And if you go there today, you will notice where the creek actually goes subsurface for 3 miles. And so not only did Idaho Forest Group really step forward in terms of conservation and put all of this land in easement, they're now doing all of the work to restore the creek with project partners like Trout Unlimited, the Restoration Partnership. They're going to restore this entire creek bed, bring the water back up, allowing those fish to spawn back in the creek as they did before the mining.
Yes, lots of partners on that project, and it's been going on for a while. I know Trout Unlimited National has been involved. Aaron Plew, who lives locally, is a person who's been pretty involved, and you all are too. Now, I'm backing up for just a moment, Katie, because I misspoke. I said your largest land acquisition, and I heard you subtly correcting me with an easement. So it's not all acquisitions for you. There are easements, acquisitions. It's a mix of ways of preserving.
Right. Most of the work we do in conservation is through easements. So it's that tool that landowners use where the only thing that we take out of the toolbox of what they can do on their land is subdivide it. So now when we think about those 75 plus parcels of land that could have in the future been subdivided and could have been sold off piece by piece to private landowners, those now are all intact under one parcel. And so it's pulling that, you know, in terms of Idaho Forest Group, it's pulling that whole parcel together. In terms of the projects that we do with private landowners, it's doing an easement so that that land stays whole. Those 100 acres stay as 100 acres in perpetuity, and they're not subdivided into 5-acre parcels. So it's really the mechanism that a landowner can use. If they've been working their land, their 200 acres for their life and their parents' life, and that has been working land, it's been hay land, it's been range land, it's been, you know, 200 acres of forest land that they've worked, and they want to see that land remain intact and not, you know, not chunked off bit by bit when they pass on, then this is a tool that they can use in order to make sure that that land stays whole.
Yeah, it's really exciting when people are wanting and willing to do that. Mm-hmm. It must have some impact on the land value or not.
It does have a little impact on the land value, but what, for instance, let's take that 200 acres, and that 200 acres, it would be appraised at a certain value if there was the ability to subdivide it. So let's say you could subdivide it into 10-acre parcels. So you have 20 parcels. So that has a value to it, right?
Right.
And then when you decide to put the land in easement, you take away the value of the land as it is subdivided and it has this new value. And it's that difference in the value that is the easement value. So you as a landowner can donate that easement. In some cases, there are programs such as Forest Legacy that you can get that value of that easement back into your pocket. A lot of agricultural producers do that because there's a program called AIL, Agricultural Land Easement. A lot of agricultural producers will use that. And then when they get that money in return, they'll use it to either buy more land to add to their agricultural land holdings, or they'll use it to buy machinery in order to create efficiencies on the farm.
Yeah, what a wonderful solution to preserving and making easements and not having it be quite as painful for the landowner.
Exactly.
Really cool. Mm-hmm. All righty. So Pritchard Creek, that's a big one. Next up, Potlatch LP Community Land Trust. What is that? What is that about?
So this was our interesting foray. For many people, they had to, you know, probably read the article many times in order to figure out, so why is the land conservation organization breaking ground on a housing project? But really, this all stemmed from the work that we do in community. So part of that work that we do in community is really looking at what is our community dealing with right now? What are some of those struggles? And as many of us know, especially as the pandemic set in, our land values, our house values began to skyrocket even more, well past what our workforce could afford. And we, you know, what is exacerbated when you have this issue of your workforce not being able to live in the community is really a fragmentation of the community as we see it. And community has a lot of values. The community of Sandpoint, the community of Priest River, vibrant communities that really need to be able to hold their workforce, be able to have them working and then being able to participate in activities after work instead of commuting to far distances to places where they actually can't afford to live. So it also what happens as well is fragmentation of that land. So when you think about where is it cheap enough for me to buy acreage, be able to have a job in Sandpoint and be able to buy acreage. Well, I'm driving up the road 25 miles and I'm driving to that 5 acres that was subdivided into acre plots. So the more that we can keep that from happening and be able to have our workforce living in and around our community is really important. So we decided as a board to start thinking about and looking at, could we make an impact through what's called a community land trust? And so it's when a trust holds the land, you build the houses on top of it, and then that subsidy of taking that land value out of the house allows that house to come down in value. In addition, you need other donations to make this work. But we started thinking about, is there anybody in this community or anybody in the region that is doing this work? And at the time, the answer was no, there wasn't. So we decided to take a step in and try to begin the roots of forming a community land trust here. And that looked like, you know, a year and a half with an advisory committee of working on bylaws and working on governing documents like a ground lease. And it has now coalesced into purchasing our first property in Priest River. And these properties, just to make sure that people understand, they're not conservation properties. They're properties that are in cities connected to city services. And we're trying to, and that's the only way these properties usually work, because it doesn't work to have them on larger land masses, and it doesn't work to have them not connected to sewer and water. So this project is right in the heart of Priest River. It's going to be 6 homes. And in the meantime, we've actually also been able to find a partner that was working down in Boise, but has decided to expand statewide. So we've brought Leap Housing out of Boise up to partner with us on this project. And we're working hand in hand. We meet weekly now, and this will be the first project of the two organizations. Then eventually Kinnexu Land Trust will step back. And Leap and Bonner is working with Bonner County Housing, Bonner Community Housing Agency. And so they together will work to really fill this need here in our community. And we'll be able to step back as a partner and just support that work.
Yes. And so interesting. And I've got many, many questions. I won't ask them all. Where can people learn more about this? At your website?
People can learn more right now at our website. But the partnership right now is working on putting together a landing page. And we're going to have that housed with Leap. So it's leaphousing.org. That landing page will be housed there. That's where they can look at how they are, if they qualify for these houses, what are the criteria? Because it's really important that these homes go to people that live in and around Priest River. So these ones are specific to Priest River and sort of a 5-6 zip code area around Priest River. We're trying to find the same project and property here in Sandpoint, Kootenai, Ponderay, so that we can also do a project here. But right now, this one is basically for people that live right now in Priest River.
Yes, and I'm sure a lot of those details are yet to come, and so we won't dive into all the weeds of those. But stay tuned, people that are needing affordable housing. Priest River will be the first one, and hopefully Sandpoint will come along soon.
Yes.
Wonderful. All right, and then I think our last topic that I've got on my outline, Katie, is the Sand Creek Water Trail. It's a trail made of water.
It's a trail made of water, and we have a little bit of water in our county. This is a pretty exciting project. This actually sort of spurred out of another project that we're working on called Sand Creek Connections, where we're working on a strategic plan with the landowners and the people, all of us in the community that love and appreciate Sand Creek. So this stemmed from that, because that would be a small portion of the water trail, but it was a grant-funded work, and it's with our partners at the Kalispell Tribe, the Bonner County Museum, The Trust for Public Land is participating, the cities of Ponderay, Dover, and Sandpoint, as well. I'm feeling like I'm forgetting a partner. But anyways, we're working on creating a water trail map all along the shores of Lake Ponderay. So this goes from Albany Falls all the way around down to Bayview and back up on the other side of the lake. So what we're pinpointing, this reminds me of our very important partner, which is Project 7B. So what we're pinpointing is all the public access points along the lake, and we're deciding which of these points we want to highlight as part of the water trail. And so the best part of this project has been the reconnaissance we've had to do on the lake. So we've had to do 3 boat trips, which have been on spectacular days, where we go and we look at all the different public access points on the lake. We've photographed them. And in the end, what you as the user will see is we'll have both a waterproof map that you could take on the water if you're going kayaking or you want to paddleboard a small section, our canoeing. It will give you, you know, identifying in the handheld map. It won't give you all the identifying photos, but there will be also a online map as well that will give you identifying photos. It will tell you the satellite points of where these spots are. What are the services offered? So, is this a boat ramp? Is there a boat ramp? Is there toilet facilities? Is there a picnic table? So it will allow you to plan a day on the lake where you could paddle along the shoreline. And then there's also going to be obviously places that are identified as public access points that don't have, you know, that are really more primitive and don't have any types of services, but might be a nice beach for you to land on. And so that you can take a rest along your water trail journey. And it's really, it's just part of this. It's the important part of really identifying what are your public lands. And what do you have access to and hopefully be able to utilize those?
Yeah, it sounds to me that it would really take away some barriers that people would have. I mean, when I am on the water, it's often a question of how far can I go? Where might I stop? And this could really encourage folks that don't get out onto the water as much to start doing that.
Absolutely. And it can be just like, it can just be for an hour, right? And you notice there's 3 places along that stop that, you know, you could get out and stretch your legs and experience a little bit of the landscape and then get back on that kayak or canoe and keep going.
What a cool idea. And another question that has come to my mind is, are some of these public accesses not necessarily available by foot or by car? Or
absolutely,
there some that are only available to us by water?
There are many only available to us by water.
And that's mm-hmm. quite neat, too. Mm-hmm. A new way to get to a place you've not been before and a map to get you there.
Yeah, we actually, all of us went on the boat, all the partners went on the boat ride together and we're looking at each. And it was great because we had Hannah from the museum going along with us, telling us a lot of the historical stories of these places, the ferry crossings, the miners and where they lived. I think the joy for most of us was really truly understanding all those special places that are on our lake. And all of us would be like, oh, I need to come back here. I mean, even just thinking about, you know, it's going to be a spectacular weekend. If you want a pretty easy place to go and camp, I will hope that it's still open. I'm pretty sure it is, but Albany Falls Campground, I had no idea that place existed, and it is a lovely little campground just down the road from us with quick, you know, campsites right there on the lake. So if you're thinking about potentially doing a really easy camping trip this weekend, you should go and explore Albany Falls. We have a lot of ways to enjoy the lake that we might not think about.
How true. And I have 2 questions. Now you've created more questions in my mind about this fun project that you're working on. And one is, it seems to me like so many things that are developing in Sandpoint, this might be sort of a destination activity.
Yes.
I think so.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it can be a destination activity for ourselves, right?
Yes.
So many places that, and it will bring in people as well. I mean, we hope that this potentially could get, there's National Water Trails recognition. And the reason being is that some of our spots along the water trail do need some TLC. And so our idea is that not only will this help us, help our community really understand those access points along the lake, but ideally now we will continue to write grants and look for funding in order to take care of some of these spaces that are along our lake and, you know, clean up that, you know, or put in a vault toilet where vault toilets are needed. So really help take care of take care of the land and make sure that it can be used like this in, for long into the future.
Yes, and it can be loved because mm-hmm. waterways can really look rough if they're not taken care of.
Exactly.
So true. And then last question about this project. Will the historical information be available? Will we get to learn some of the history of these spots?
Yes, absolutely. So the I talk about the physical map, and there will be history within the physical map, the waterproof map that you'll be able to hold. But as well, we're going to create what's called a story map online. And so at any the story map will just be the map of the lake, and wherever you're at, you can push, you know, select with your finger or your mouse, or on your phone as you're paddling down the lake, you'll be able to select a spot, and there will be the incorporation of not only the amenities that are at the sites, but the stories that go along with. Not every site is going to have stories, but many of them will, and those stories will be on that story map.
How exciting. That sounds like a great way to experience our waterways this summer, next summer maybe.
Absolutely.
If not this summer. Well, wow, we have covered so much in our short amount of time. It's been great, Katie. We're about to come to a close, but is there anything you'd like to add before I thank you and go to music?
Oh, my goodness. I would just say that looking forward to winter, looking forward to seeing everybody either put on skis or snowshoes or get out on their snow bikes or just go hiking out in the woods. Please, if you have any questions about any of the work that we do at Connect Sioux Land Trust, my door is always open. Just come on in and let's have a conversation. Or if you want to volunteer, always ways to volunteer on our website. And just spend the next, I would just encourage everybody to spend the next few weeks that are this glorious weather going out and exploring the outdoors as you can. If it's going for a great hike, awesome. If it's just going for a wonderful drive and experiencing all that we have in and around our region, do that as well. Just soak it all in.
That's great. A great way to end this conversation. I want to thank you for joining us this morning. Listeners, this has been Katie Eglund Cox, the Executive Director of Connect Sioux Land Trust, sharing a bunch of information with us this morning, what's happening, land easements and acquisitions, programs, and what's new in the community spaces that they've been creating. Thank you, Katie.
Thanks for having me, Julie.
You bet. All right, folks, we're going to go to another fun song, and then I hope you all have a great Tuesday, and hope you'll tune in on Wednesday for, guess what, Candidates Forum. It's very interesting, so don't miss that tomorrow morning. All right, coming up next is Dave Wilcox with Sunshine on the Land. Have a great day.